Pasuk tells us in this week's parsha, when Avraham Avinu welcomed the three guests to his home, that he fed them at the end of the first line over here. Va'ika chema v'chalav uven habakar asher asa. He fed them butter and milk and the calf that he had prepared. And the Mishnah tells us in Masechtas Kiddushin that Avraham Avinu fulfilled all of the mitzvahs of the Torah even prior to the mitzvahs being commanded, before the Torah was given. And therefore, the Mefarshim ask, how could it be that Avraham Avinu fed his guests basar b'chalav? Why wasn't he careful on those Isurim, the prohibition of not confusing or eating together milk and meat? So the Malbim comments, the obvious answer is that he fed them milk and then meat, which is permitted. However, the Malbim suggests that, but the Malbim also suggests, over here, Oysalev, Vayimayar, Lassas, Oysoy, Al Yadei, Sefer Yetzira. He created it through the Sefer Yetzira. This was not a natural animal. This is an animal that he created using the Sefer Yetzira. And therefore, it did not have the status of fleshix, and one was able to consume it together with milk and butter. And that's why the Pasuk says, Uven HaBakar Asher Asa, not the calf that he had prepared, but the calf that he made using the Sefer Yetzira. And this Malbim is quoted by the Piskei Tshuva in Yoredeya, that meat that is created using the Sefer Yetzira does not have the status of fleshix and can be eaten together with milk or with butter. Similar notion is suggested by the Shlach HaKadosh in interpreting a pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. Vayove Yosef Adi Basam Ra'al Avihem. Yosef spoke negatively about his brothers, to his father Yaakov Avinu. What did he say about them? So Rashi explains that he informed Yaakov that his brothers, the Shvatim, were eating Abram and Hachai. However, how could it, in the Mefarshim is, how could it be? The Shvatim also fulfilled the mitzvahs of the Torah even prior to the Torah being given. They volunteered to perform all the mitzvahs of the Torah. How could they not have been nizhar, careful, not to eat Abram and Hachai, a limb from a live animal? So many suggest that we're discussing an animal that was shechted, but it was continuing to be mefarches, to shecht. A Jew is allowed to eat an animal after it's shechted, even though it's still shaking, a ben noach, where there is no heter shechita, is not allowed to eat an animal until it's completely dead. Shechita plays no role, and therefore if the animal is still shaking, a ben noach is not allowed to eat it. And they, Shvatim, were eating this animal after it was shechted, before it stopped shaking. They felt they had the status of Yisraelim, and the animal should be permitted. Yosef argued they had the status of Bnei Noach, and therefore they had to wait for the animal to stop shaking, and what they were eating was Abram and Achai. That's the Prima Gadim suggests, something along those lines. However, the Shlach HaKadosh, which is cited by the Piskei Tshuva, and Simon Samach Beis of Cotton Beis, explains that this animal that the Shvatim were eating was an animal that they created using the Sefer Yetzira. And therefore, it did not have the status as a live animal, and it did not have the prohibition, was not the subject to the prohibition of Avraham and Achai or Basar and Achai, because it was created using the Sefer Yetzira. And Yosef did not know that, and therefore he reported to his father that what it seemed to be to him, that they were eating Avraham and Achai, but in fact it was not, because it was an animal that was created with the Sefer Yetzira. And what emerges from these, the Malbim and from the Shlach HaKadosh, is that anything that's created with the Sefer Yetzira does not acquire the same halachic status as if it had occurred naturally. So meat that's created with the Sefer Yetzira would not be fleshix, it could be consumed together with milk. And an animal that was created with the Sefer Yetzira, one could take a limb off of it and eat it even while the animal is still alive. There is another source that seems to echo the same idea, and that is the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin on Samachem Abayz, over here is Dalid, that Rava Bara Gavra, Rava created an individual with the Sefer Yetzira, Shardu Kamed Reb Zera, and he sent him to Reb Zera. Savi Kamishtoi Bahadei, Reb Zera started talking to him. The Golem, who was created with the Sefer Yetzira, did not respond. So he realized, he said that you must be a Golem. Even though you could create a human being with the Sefer Yetzira, he can't endow with the ability to speak. So he said, from the fact that this guy can't speak, so it must be Min Chavrayat. One of my friends created you with the Sefer Yetzira. So he commanded him to go back to the dirt, and he killed him. No longer went back to where he came from. So, from the fact that he killed the Golem, perhaps indicates that this Golem does not have the status of a human being because he was created using the Sefer Yetzirah. So in fact, the Chacham Tzvi has in his Tshuvas a suffix whether or not a Goylem can be mitzdarif to a minion. This in fact even makes it into the Mishnah Brura. This suffix, can a Goylem be mitzdarif to a minion, is a, you know, Rabbanim always joke, of course a Goylem is mitzdarif to a minion, just come to Shacharis every morning, you'll see that many people who can't speak or can't think are mitzdarif to a minion. But anyway, so the Chacham Tzvi has this suffix, is a Goylem mitzdarif to a minion? And he says, wow, Rav Zera killed the Goylem that was created by Rava. He says, yeah, but maybe he does have the status of a human being, just is excluded from the Isra of Ritzicha, because the Pasuk in Parashas Noach tells us, Shofech dam ha'odam bo'odam dam ha'yishofech. You're not allowed to kill somebody, the blood of a person, in a person, meaning a person who was created by a person, and biologically. But if he was created using Sefer Yetzirah, maybe he's excluded from the Isra of Ritzicha, but that says nothing about the fact that perhaps he could, in fact, be a human being with regards to other issues, and perhaps even be mitzdarif to a minion. Others argue, even if he is a human being for other issues, well, how did he become Jewish? He might be a human being, but how did he become a Yid, that he should be mitzdarif to a minion? But even aside from that, putting that issue aside, the other possibility is what's accepted by the son of the Chacham Tzvi, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and by the Chazanish later, is that you see from this Gemara not just that a Goylem who's created with the Sefer Yetzirah is excluded from the Isser of Ritzicha, but this is, in fact, the Gemara is indicating that he's not a human being at all, because he was created through the Sefer Yetzirah, in which case it's similar to the argument of the Malbim, the argument of the Shlach Kodesh, that any item that's created using the Sefer Yetzirah does not acquire halachic status of that which it appears to be. So an animal that's created with the Sefer Yetzirah won't be able to take a limb off that animal, would not be Basa Menachai or Eva Menachai. Halachically, it's not considered to be a live animal. The meat of that animal would not be considered to be fleishik. Someone could eat it together with milchik, so it would be parev. And a human being, a golem that's created with a sefer yetzirah, would not have the status of the halachic status of a human being, as you see from the fact that Rav Zera killed the golem of Rava. Why is this? Yeah.
Go back to the first verse by the Malbim. It seems like it's a major drush on the pasuk that he was created from the Sefer Yetzirah.
Seems that way, huh?
And like they're getting all this like halachic concept from it. Like, how does that work?
Good. We'll get to your point in a second. Saying not that compelling, you feel?
Right.
Where is it in the pasuk? But we have many sources that seem to echo that same notion. So
right.
If it would have just been for that, maybe you're right. But perhaps already you see from the Gemara with the person who's created with the Sefer Yetzirah. If Zera killed him, you see, perhaps what's created with Sefer Yetzirah doesn't acquire halachic status. Why should this be the case, though? So one could have argued this is a special thing with regards to Sefer Yetzirah. If you create things with Sefer Yetzirah, so it's outside of the realm of the halacha as we know it. Or one could have explained it in more conceptual terms based on things that we are familiar with. And that is because one could argue, as we have over here, based on the Gemara Masechtas Pesachim and the Gemara Masechtas Chagiga, as to why this should be the case. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Pesachim, Kol Yisurin Shabbat Torah and Lokin Aleim El Derech Achilasan. A person only receives Malkus if he eats Malkus Hasuris in the normal way. But let's say he takes pork and he eats it raw, or he eats it frozen. So there's no Malkus because you ate it. Usser, but you ate it in the not normal way, so you have not violated the Iser and the Torah to the degree that you would be Chayav Malkus. Why not? So Rabbeinu David comments in his Chiddush Masechtas Pesachim, V'tam Mishum, Da'afke Rachmana V'Loshan Achila. The Torah describes these Isurim as an Achila, an eating, and this is not a normal Achila. Therefore, it's not what's being described by the Torah. When the Torah said it's an Isur Achila, it's describing a normal kind of Achila, usual kind of Achila, not an abnormal, unusual kind of Achila. And there's a similar Gemara Masechtas Chagiga, where the Gemara tells us, has a Shaila, as we know, a Kohen Gadol has to marry a Psula. So what if you have a Psula that's Mu'uberes? She's pregnant. Gemara asks, one minute, can she marry a Kohen Gadol? Can a psula who's pregnant marry a Kohen Gadol? How did she become pregnant if she's a psula? Our religion, that those kind of things don't happen. So the Gemara suggests one possibility, Gemara said one could have relations while the doom besulim remain intact, but then the Gemara suggests a different possibility that Ba'ambati Yibra, she became pregnant in the bathhouse. A man went into the bath, was Moitzi Zera. She subsequently came into the same bath and became pregnant from that Zera. Okay. So Rabbeinu Chananel comments on that Gemara. He says, V'zeh ma'isen isimhu. This is a ma'isen ace. I don't think he means that it's miraculous. It means that it's unusual. V'ein et me'aleda. And therefore, she would not be Tamea Leda. She'ena nikariba Isha Kisazria. When the Torah says Isha Kisazria, and she gives birth, that she's Tamea for different periods for a man, you know, a boy, a different period for a girl, that does not apply to a woman who became pregnant in an unusual fashion, like Nisabra Bambati, only if a woman became pregnant in the usual way, in the normal way. In fact, this Rabbeinu Chananel is quoted by Rosh Shlomo Zalman in his Tshuvas to Mincha Shlomo, that therefore a baby. This is relevant for Bris Milah on Shabbos, because Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, you can only do a Bris Milah on Shabbos if the eighth day after the birth of the child, you know, coincides with Shabbos. If the mother is Tamei Leda, if the mother is not Tamei Leda, the Bris is not Doicha Shabbos. That's why it's one of the reasons that Yosei Doifen, we don't do a Bris Milah on Shabbos because the woman perhaps didn't give birth in the normal way, therefore not Tamei Leda. So too, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, a woman who becomes pregnant with advanced reproductive technologies of our time, and she did not become pregnant in the normal way, that would be like Nisabra Bambati, in which case the woman should not be Tmei Aleda, and therefore the bris of a child that's born, is conceived in these with these advanced reproductive technologies, should not be Doche. Should not be Doicha Shabbos. What point, huh?
That's Rosh Hashanah Zalman?
Yeah, Rosh Hashanah Zalman says that. Others disagree that this is, you know, more scientific, and we'll get to that point in a second, but that was Rosh Hashanah Zalman's position. At what point do we say there's so many children being conceived in this fashion that now became normal? One could make that argument, one could make that argument. At a certain point, this thing becomes so commonplace that it became normal, that now this is no longer mycenism or abnormal. So many children are being conceived with these reproductive technologies that this is just as, you know, I don't know if it has to be 50%, but if it's prevalent enough that it's common and commonplace, at some point we're going to have to call this a normal way of conception as well. Similar precedent for that is the Gemara says, Masechta Shabbos, one is not allowed to cook on a fire on Shabbos. What about if I cook in the sun? So Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos and Daf Lamed Tes, that's mutter on Shabbos. Hedeg gomer. To cook on a pan that was heated up in the sun, that's awesome, the Rabbanan, and I might come to confuse it with a pan that was heated up on the fire. But to cook in the sun itself, I would take an egg, fry it in the sun, if that such a thing was possible. You can't use a magnifying glass that already changes everything. But hedeg gomer. Why? Why is this? It's not normal. Ain't derech bishul b'kach. It's not normal. So does that mean every form of cooking that doesn't use a fire is equivalent to bishul b'chama and should be mutter on Shabbos? What about cooking in a microwave, leaving the electrical components aside for the moment? If I'd say cooking in a microwave, would that be bishul on Shabbos or not? So Rav Moshe says, in theory, it's bishul b'chama. It's like cooking in the sun. There's no fire. But it's so commonplace, says Rav Moshe. Every kitchen... Rav Moshe actually thought microwaves were going to replace traditional ovens. That was what his prognostication for the future of the modern kitchen. Why do we need conventional ovens anymore? We just have microwaves. But as we know, microwaves only get you so far. You need a conventional oven too. But every kitchen that we know of has a microwave, so it's certainly commonplace. Rav Moshe says now it became bishul d'oraisa, even though there's no fire there. Because how can you call it not common anymore? It's commonplace. These things change with place and time. So it's over here. Maybe one could argue at a certain point does it have to become commonplace and will be considered a regular birth. But that's what the Rabbeinu Chananel writes. So based on these two sources, Rabbi Chananel writes in the Kovet Shiurim, and this is found in the comments of the Eglei Tal and his Psicha to Hilchos Shabbos, that's the Avnei Nezer, and his Sefer on the Melachos of Shabbos called the Eglei Tal. The Chidush HaRim has this in his Truvis and many others. That the Torah only addresses that which is done in the normal and the usual way. So a woman is only Tmei Leda if she becomes pregnant in the usual way. If it's not the usual way, it's simply not what the Torah is talking about. If you cook in such an abnormal way, perhaps even on Shabbos would be Hedeg Gomer, like Bishul B'chama. Or the Gemara says, "Pesachim, if you eat it in an abnormal way, that's not what the Torah is talking about. The Torah said achila. Achila means a normal achila. So therefore, writes Rabbi Chanan over here, Zion, near the other part of the Shabbos, but it's a kalacher yad. If a person does a malacha on Shabbos in in a backhanded fashion, abnormally, so it's only us midrabanan. Eino din meyuchad beisurei Shabbos, kimo mekalka malacha shein tzricha legufa. This is not like malacha shein tzricha legufa, which you don't find in other areas of halacha that's limited to hilchah Shabbos." The dinim of the Torah only given for the usual and for the normal, and that which is done in an unusual fashion, abnormal fashion, is simply not what is being addressed by the Torah. So perhaps one could argue as well over here that that which is created through the Sefer Yetzirah is simply not what the Torah is addressing. It's not fleshix. The animal that's made with the Sefer Yetzirah is not considered to be a live animal that would have the prohibitions of Basa Min Achai and Eber Min Achai. And perhaps even a human being that's created with Sefer Yetzirah would not have the halachic status of a human being with regards to the Sefer Tzicha or other issues, because it was created in an abnormal way. So therefore, that's simply just not what the Torah is describing. If that's the case, so there are those that argue, Rav Shechter makes this argument, as well as, he told me in conversation, I don't think he ever wrote it yet, and there are other Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael as well. And there's a promotional video for one of the companies that's producing this clean meat that has a number of Rabbanim who give their stated their position, that the meat now that is being created with stem cells, where they take, it's really a myoblast, which is a little bit different than a stem cell. It's a meat, it's a muscle cell already. Stem cells could go a bone, could have a muscle, could be different things. This is already a muscle cell. They extract it from an animal, grow it in a culture or in a serum, and in the hopes of making, chopped meat, and then they ultimately hope, to create a fillet of steak from this stem cell, which of course has many benefits. Some are motivated primarily by the environment and greenhouse gases, other motivated by the price of meat. And, other considerations. So this is a very popular, as you all know, it's in the news all over the place. And I don't know why, but Israel is the center of this discussion. So the, what do you say? So was one that was produced in 2013, but that's part of the issue, and they have to make it taste similar to meat. It's not as easy as it sounds, because you say, well, I'll grow muscle in a petri dish, I'll take a muscle cell, grow the stem cells in this culture and serum, and however, whatever the process is of growing, that it'll continue to multiply. So you would think, well, if it's muscle, it'll continue to grow into a muscle, but it's not really the case, because muscle cells develop their taste, from being used as a muscle. And then there's fats that mix in and other things. So if just growing in a petri dish, you're missing a lot of those other things. So it's unclear if it tastes like a bland tofu, or if it tastes like regular meat, and how much the serum, the culture that they put it in contributes to the taste. Is it really from the cells? But let's leave all of that aside. I took stem cells, and let's say for argument's sake it actually tastes like meat, and I grew it in the culture. So let's say the stem cell was taken from a treif animal, and the veil animal. Let's say it was taken from an animal that was not shechted, which is subject to the prohibition of basar min achai. Oh, what should the status of this be? Should it be fleshix or milchix once I grow it in this petri dish or test tube or wherever it's growing? So what should be the status of it? So these Rabbanim have suggested that it should be, it doesn't matter where it's derived from, it should be parif and kosher, because it was created using, like the Sefer Yetzirah, using something that was not the normal and usual way of creating meat, which is from shechting a live animal. And therefore, since it's created in a non-normal way, the dinim of the Torah is simply not addressing that situation. And therefore, it should be like the meat of the malbim that is able to be eaten together with milchix, or the animal that is discussed by the Shulah Kodesh should not be subject to the prohibition of Bas Menachai. Yeah.
Why don't we say I'm sure it's been brought up. Why can't we say the same thing din by this stem cell meat as we do by chicken, that it is considered meat, because I could be confused.
We'll get to your issue. Excellent. This is the din d'oraisa we're discussing. What should have a status? Yeah.
Well, wouldn't it make sense that something that's scientific and natural is considered a normal way?
Excellent. So first of all, there are those that disagree with this entire position. Because there's a Gemara Maseches Menachos, which the Daf Yomi just covered over here, Samach Tesem Rebeis, Bar Reb Zera. Chitin Sheyardu Ba'avim, if you have kernels of grain that fall down from the sky, from clouds. What is its status? My Mahu. It's affecting what? Lamai, what are you using it for? Ela Menachos, you want to use it for a carbon mincha flower offering. Amai Eloi, why not? Ganz good. You can use it for a carbon mincha. What about the carbon of the Shtei Alechem, which was brought together with Karbonis Behema on Shavuos with the new wheat? Can you make it out of these chitin that fell from the clouds? Because it's, the Shtei Alechem has to come from flour that grew in Eretz Yisrael. Mimosh Vosechem, from your settlement, from your communities. So Mimosh Vosechem, Amarachman, Afuki de Chutzlaritz Delay. It can't come from Chutzlaritz, but this didn't come from Chutzlaritz, it came from the clouds. Or maybe no, about the Avim Shaper Dami, maybe it came from the clouds, that's a God. Oy Dilma, maybe no, Mimosh Vosechem Davka, it has to come from Eretz Yisrael, Vafil de Avim Namiloi. And therefore, this came from the clouds, it did not come from Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so where did these chitim, theoretical, hypothetical chitim, come from? Where did they come from? Where are these chitim coming from? So Rashi explains what occurred is a tornado happened over the ocean, and there was a freighter that was full of kernels of grain. The tornado picked it up and deposited it in Eretz Yisrael. That's right. She argued about Avim, says Rashi, Im Hamotar, Kishashasu Avim Balkainis. The clouds picked it up over the ocean. And deposited in Eretz Yisrael. Why does Rashi learn that way? So the Achronim explain, because the Gemara doesn't say it came min hashamayim, from heaven through miraculous means. It came from avim, from clouds, which sounds like it's a weather-related event. Tosfos over there disagrees with Rashi, because if it really came from Chutz Laaretz, just it went through a cloud in the middle, why is that a reason to permit it for the Shtei Alechem? L'maisa, it came from Chutz Laaretz. That's not Mimosh Vosechem. Even if only Mimosh Vosechem means it shouldn't come from Chutz Laaretz, this came from Chutz Laaretz. Just because it came through the clouds in the middle should make it mutter? Taisus can't believe that's the case. That's obviously what Rashi feels. Rashi feels is a sod in the Gemara. It went through the clouds in the middle. Maybe it should be allowed. Taisus therefore doesn't learn that way. Taisus learns, Ela Nirali, says Taisus, the Al Yadei Neis Yardu Ba'avim. They came miraculously from the clouds. So at least according to Tosfos, according to Rashi, this whole Gemara is not related to our discussion. But at least according to Tosfos, this Gemara seems to indicate that chitin that are created through miraculous means have the status of chitin. What's the only reason the Gemara says you can't use it for the Shtei Alechem? Maybe it's because you need Mimosh Vosechem. You need from Eretz Yisrael. And this is not wheat from Eretz Yisrael. But is this wheat? Can use it for the carbon mincha, no problem. So don't you see from here just the opposite of the sources that we cited until now? So therefore, and there's another instance, the same issue comes up, as we all know, in the Nes of Hanukkah, one little flask of oil lasted for 8 days. But the Beis Yosef has a question, what are we celebrating? The first day, that the oil lasted 7 days. So was there miraculous oil with regards to the Nes of Chanukah's discussion in the Beis Yosef and the Taz? Is it just that this oil miraculously lasted for 8 days, or was there actually new oil that appeared miraculously? And there are those that learn that that's what occurred with the Nes of Chanukah. If that's the case, that there's new oil that appeared miraculously, don't you see from there? That oil that appears miraculously through an ace is considered to be Shemen Zayas and is kosher for Adlakas HaMenorah. This issue is discussed by Reb Chaim, and Reb Chaim proved from here that you see from this Gemara Maseches Menachos, that which is produced Derech Nes has the status of Chitim, therefore oil which has come about Derech Nes have the status of Shemen Zayas and would have been kosher for Adlakas HaMenorah. So you see like that, perhaps according to some of Farshim from the Nes of Hanukkah, without getting totally sidetracked into Hanukkah stuff. So based on this, Rav Asher Weiss wrote a tshuva to the OU. I believe that he's writing now a more elaborate tshuva. This was a two-page tshuva. That he believes, you see unequivocally from this Gemara, that which is produced, Derech Neis, has the status, has a halachic status of what it appears to be. So if meat would have been created through Derech Neis, it would have the status of fleishiks, and if it came, and all that entails. And an animal that's created by Derech Neis would have the halachic status of an animal and be subject to the prohibition of basar minachai, and would not be able, of course, to be eaten together with milchiks. Ah, the Malbim, the Shlach Kodesh, Avram Avinu, and the Malachim, and Yaakov, and the Shvatim, and eating. So he said, Drush v'agada. Please don't confuse those areas with halacha, even though they're quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva. He marginalizes them. And he says, it looks like meat, smells like meat. He even goes so far as to say, if you would create meat artificially without any stem cells, it would look like meat and taste like meat, it would be meat. It doesn't matter how it arrived here. If it looks like meat and chemically it's meat, thus haste meat, and it should be fleshix with all that, then if, you know, with all that follows. However, the truth of the matter is, one could have distinguished between this Gemara and Masechtas Menachos and the discussion that we had until now with the Sefer Yetzirah. Rav Asher Weiss makes another point. He says, by the way, and no one here is discussing meat that's created through Sefer Yetzirah. What are we discussing? The point that was raised before is that you're making it through science in a laboratory with a petri dish and a test tube. He says, what are you confusing now with Sefer Yetzirah? What does that have to do with Sefer Yetzirah? This is scientific. In fact, there are those that laugh off these Mar Makomas of the Sefer Yetzirah. We're talking about science over here. What do you bring up Sefer Yetzirah? However, I believe that if we suggest, you know, as we continue with the way that we suggested until now, that it's not because this has anything to do with the Sefer Yetzirah. This is because it was created in an not a usual fashion, abnormal fashion. And certainly, the vast majority of meat, all of the meat, the entirety of meat, now that is created by taking an animal, slaughtering it properly. That's how we derive meat. This meat is derived in an abnormal fashion. That is not what the Torah is addressing, which is a well-grounded halachic principle which we find in other areas. So if that's the case, that's how we'll understand these sources we've discussed until now. Perhaps one can distinguish between the discussion we had regarding the Sefer Yetzirah and the Gemara Masechtas Menachos. Why? Because in the Gemara Masechtas Menachos, who created the wheat? Did a person create the wheat in an abnormal fashion? No. It fell from the sky, according to Tosfos, b'derech nes. Kadosh Baruch Hu created it. Kadosh Baruch Hu can create chitim miraculously and will have the status as wheat and could be used for carbon mincha. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu could create shemen zayis miraculously and will have the status of shemen zayis. That has nothing to do with wheat that we create using the Sefer Yetzirah or meat that we create using the Sefer Yetzirah, whatever the Sefer Yetzirah might be. Obviously, which is beyond the scope of our discussion. Whatever means that uses to create items, that is not what's being discussed by the Gemara Menachos. Menachos is discussing miraculously a Kadosh Baruch Hu created, a Kadosh Baruch Hu created Shem Zayis, a Kadosh Baruch Hu created Chidim. So this distinction is mentioned over here by Rav Nosson Gishtetner in his Truvis Lahayros Nosson, a contemporary Pesach. Over here, Ois Tesu Mikol Makom Yesh Lomar Dei Mizeh Raya Degam Dovar Nivra Dei Sefer Yetzirah Havi Bechlal Zeh. This is not, the Sefer Yetzirah is not the same as the Gemara Menachos. The Yeshlomah the Davka Dovar Habo Bederech Neiz Beloi Maisa Odom Chalam Alav Dinei Torah. Yes, if Kadosh Baruch Hu created it, has the status of Chitim and the status of Shem and Zayis. The Kevin the Chazina and the Shayach Neiz Kazeh Im Kein Havi Lekein Kedarko. That's like Chitim that grow from the ground. Some come from the clouds. That was created by Kadosh Baruch Hu. No different than nature, where it grows from the ground. It comes from the sky. Kadosh Baruch Hu can choose how to run his world however he chooses to run it. But when we are involved, Kisha also Adam Ayde Sevi Yitzira. That's not simply not what the Torah is discussing. And therefore, it should be permitted and perhaps even be pariv, and it wouldn't matter where the animal came from, if it was stem cell was from a kosher animal, not a kosher animal. One could have argued, based on these sources, that in fact it is permitted, and there are poskim who focus on the process of how this meat is created. Now, Rav Asher Weiss, who focused on the product, it's meat, mamish, chemically, it's meat. So it should have the status of meat. No, we should focus on the process of how it was derived. And since it was not derived in a normal and usual fashion, it's simply not subject to the halachic ramifications. Yeah.
Oh, you answered.
Okay. Even if one will argue, we'll reject these sources. Come on, what do you bother me? Sefer Yetzirah, we're discussing science over here. Don't confuse me with how it was created and Sefer Yetzirah and things like that. No. Or this is scientific. Of course, the halacha should continue. Consider it as meat because, this is considered to be normal and usual because it's derived through science. There's a good argument to say not so. But the first original stem cells are not able to be there subclinical. You're not able to see it with the human eye, only with a microscope. I just recently discovered, perhaps they don't even use, they might even use bigger pieces, but at least in theory, they could derive from stem cells that are microscopic and begin that small. You know, they don't have to take a sizable amount. They can begin with a small amount that's even microscopic that you can't see. And generally, the halacha does not prohibit items that are not able to be seen. That's quoted over here by the Aruch HaShulchan. And Siman Pei Dalet, Sif Lamed Vav of Yoredeya, that even though when he says what he was told, that when a person breathes in, he inhales many bacteria and other microscopic organisms, that is not an iser of eating bugs. Or a person who takes a drink of water, which of course has bacteria, and perhaps even you know, other microscopic items and whatever inside of it, that's not an iser of drinking bugs. The water, it should not be confused with the issue of the water today, of filtering water, those bugs can be seen with the human eye. I saw it myself. When they're alive, you can see them swimming around. But the bugs that you can't see are inconsequential in the eyes of Allah and are permitted. That's where Moshe's tshuva in the Igros Moshe, that of course tefillin have to be square. But Rav Moshe says, square means whatever appears to us to be square. You don't have to take calibration instruments and make elaborate calculations. Is it exactly square? There is no such thing as an exact square. It's never going to be perfectly square. So, but Rav Moshe says, what appears to us to be square? So too, one could have argued over here, if these original stem cells are subvisual, they're subclinical, so perhaps they should be permitted at that stage. And even if it later grows into something bigger, it was already permitted and it's derived from something that's permitted. But yeah?
Is that like saying that the bug that starts out small, you can't see it, and grows? And
what bug starts out small that you can't see it?
Every being starts out at one cell level.
But not as it appears to us on the scene.
But isn't it the same idea? It grows out to be bigger.
This is mutter right now. And I have it in my hands. What do you have in your hands that you're going to grow? You're saying, let's say I would take the cell of a bug and grow it in a petri dish in a test tube. Maybe.
No, not even. Just as things grow in nature, everything starts out.
Correct, but when it appears to me and I'm handling it, what size is it?
But we're not eating the meat at that size.
That's right, but I have it now. Are these stem cells mutter or usser? If it's subclinical, one could argue that they're mutter. No. Everything that comes after, then perhaps it's being derived from something that's mutter and parv, because it's subclinical. So there are those that argue with this. First of all, you can make your argument, which is, yeah, but it's going to continue to grow and then it will be clinical. I'll be able to see it, which is what you're getting at. Or you could argue like Shlomo Zalman does in the Minchas Shlomo. He says, yeah, come on. If it's subclinical, subvisual, so you're not responsible for it because you can't see it. Here you're dealing with it. You're handling it in a laboratory. How can you say, by doing that, you're endowing it with chashivas, with the significance? By dealing with it. So how can you say, obviously, if it's so subclinical, it's so unimportant, and inconsequential, here you are handling it. So over here, one can make the argument, you're handling the stem cells in a laboratory, or these myoblasts, so that endows it with significance. The problem is, though, yeah.
You would say that then it would be considered meat, then? If it has this.
It would be whatever it is. So if it's meat, it's meat. The problem with Shlomo Zalman's argument is that there's two ways of understanding this principle of that the Torah doesn't consider or does not hold you responsible for things that you can't see. One possibility is because, based on a rule the Gemara has in a few places, Lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharis. The Gemara says, Masechta Zuma, you're not allowed to daven in a room that has excrement. So the Gemara says, what if there's such a minuscule amount of excrement, I can't even see it? So the Gemara says, well, then you're not, it's not included. Lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharis. So too, over here, Lo nitna Torah, if I can't breathe, I can't drink anything, who knows, there might be bacteria that I can't see. Lo nitna Torah l'malachei asharis. The Torah is not given to malachim, to human beings, and therefore we operate with what we see. So then, Rav Shlomo Zalman's argument makes sense. Oh, I can't hold you responsible for it. But here you're going out of your way to deal with it, to be metabo with it. So, oh, come on. Now I can't hold you responsible for it. Yes, it's true. I can't hold you responsible for things you can't see. But here you are being metabo with it. You're the one who derived it from the animal. Come on. That's one possibility. However, there's another possibility, another possible explanation, reasoning why it is that the Torah doesn't hold us responsible for things that we can't see. Not because Onit in the Torah Malachi Ashares, but simply because the dinim of the Torah relate to that which we perceive with our own eyes. Not to what is chemically or biologically taking place. It's what we see. That's what determines the halacha. And anything that's subclinical is insignificant in the eyes of halacha. Not because I can't account for it, because it's too difficult. But because the Torah just ignores anything that you can see. A good example of this is the Gemara Masechta Shabbos. The Gemara says Masechta Shabbos quotes one opinion that you can kill a lice on Shabbos. Why is one opinion feel you can kill lice on Shabbos? Because ain't a parva rova, it doesn't reproduce. How then do there come to be more lice than there were before? A spontaneous generation. Came from nowhere. The air, whatever. And the only time it's prohibited to kill something on Shabbos is if it's parva rova, if it reproduces. If it doesn't reproduce, spontaneous generation, you're allowed to kill it on Shabbos. And that's the psak that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Since the time of Louis Pasteur, we know that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. It reproduces, but it's a microscopic level. That's why we don't see it. So there were those that suggested, perhaps now we should be machmir, not to kill lice on Shabbos. That was suggested in the Pachad Yitzchak by Rav Yitzchak Lapranti, which was an encyclopedia. Halachic encyclopedia suggested, we quote some paiskim, we should be machmir now that you can't kill lice on Shabbos, even though it says the Shulchan Aruch is allowed, because we know it is part of a rav, it does multiply. However, others argued we should maintain the psak in the Shulchan Aruch. Why? So the best argument to maintain the psak in the Shulchan Aruch that it's mutter to kill lice on Shabbos is because it appears that, yes, it's true, biologically it reproduces. That might be. But it appears to us as if it comes from nowhere because we can't see the eggs that it's laying, as we mentioned before. Since we can't see it, so it's not halakhically part of a rava. So therefore, the halakha only addresses what we can see, and it's mutter to kill the kina on Shabbos. And so over here, one could argue, even if you're being metaba with it, even if I'm dealing with it, the Torah simply does not address things that are subvisual, because the Torah, the halakhs of the Torah are addressing that which we can see. And if you can't see it, then it's beyond the scope of what halakha is interested in. So not because it's too difficult. Yeah, but here you are dealing with it, so don't tell me it's too difficult. No, it's because the Torah simply is ignoring that. So if that's the case, then even if you're being metabo with it, one could have made the argument that it's a lot, but I hear the argument that you mentioned before. Yeah, now it's subclinical, but it's going to grow to become bigger, so then that's not exactly analogous. Yeah.
Would that opinion be like Rav Elchanan that says everything has, like the Torah only deals with things in a normal way? Or
I think it's a different principle. I mean, we're stating a lot of global principles, but I think it's a different principle.
Okay.
That is that the Torah addresses situations as we perceive them. They're both based on the same general notion that the Torah was given to human beings for the normal situations of life. And obviously we can interpret it, and we should interpret it in our own, you know, the way we perceive it. And it's addressing things that are gone about in the normal way. Okay, but there are those that reject all of these arguments. We suggested really two arguments to say why this stem cell meat should be pariv and should it matter where it's derived from, a kosher animal, a trefa animal, or if it's, you know, even a live animal. It is first because it's not created in the normal, unusual way. Therefore, the Torah is simply not, you know, doesn't have the halachic associations we would make with traditional basar, like something that's created with the Sefer Yetzirah. And there were those that disagreed that this is scientific. How can you call this Sefer Yetzirah? And then there's Gemar Menachos that seems to contradict it. Okay. And those that disagree with all things. And then there's another possibility, because it starts out with cells that are subclinical and subvisual, and those are permitted. And therefore, everything that follows should also be permitted. And then there are those that disagree. No, but you're handling it. How can you call that that's something that's too difficult to manage? You're handling it. Obviously, it has halachic status. So if you reject both of these arguments, what should the status of this stem cell meat be? If you're going to reject these two kulas, so what should the status be? So many argue, if it's taken from a nevela animal, an animal wasn't shechted properly, or a live animal, which is prohibited to eat now because of bas menachai, so then all the meat that grows should be prohibited as well, perhaps based on the concept of yoytzim in ha'aser aser. The Mishnah tells us over here, Masechta Bechoros, Daf Hamid Beis, that a behemoth tahara If you have a kosher animal, a cow, gives birth to a camel, what's the status of the camel? The camel's permitted because its mother was a kosher animal. What about a camel that gives birth to a cow? A camel gives birth to a cow. Treif animal gives birth to a kosher animal. So Mishnah says, Usser. Even though it's a cow, chews its cuts with hooves, because it was derived from a camel. That's prohibited. That's called Yaitzim in Usser. Where is that derived from? So the Gemara in Vavim Abayz derives it from the fact that these sort of camels repeated twice in the Torah. Once in Parsha Shmini and again in Parsha Re'eh. Why is it said twice? To teach us, not only is the camel aser, but the child of the camel is aser too. Yoytze mina aser, aser. That which came from that which is aser as well. Not only that, but the milk from the camel is aser. Even though milk from a live cow is mutter, even though the cow is alive and you can't eat the cow while it's alive, it's basam and achai, milk that comes from the cow is exeris akasav, that's allowed. Milk from a camel is prohibited because yaitzim in aser aser, milk from a cow is an exception to the rule. This is derived from the fact that it says es hagomel and the gomel. So a cow that comes from a camel is prohibited, and the milk that comes from a camel is prohibited, and so too 1 + 1 = 2. The milk that comes from a cow that comes from a camel would also be prohibited. The Gemara is another source for this principle from the Gemara Masechta Schulin. Because the pasuk says in the Sefer in Parsha Shmini that one of the birds that's prohibited is a bas hayana. Anybody know what a bas hayana is?
Seagull.
Is it? I guess it's an ostrich. Why is it called a bas hayana, the daughter of the yana? So you say, well, we have bnei yana. Okay, yeah, sometimes. However, elsewhere in Tanakh, it's referred to as just yana. Pasuk Megillas Eicha. So why over here is it called a bas hayana? Says the Gemara, to teach us, not only is the yana the ostrich usher, the egg of the ostrich is also usher, yoytzim in a usher usher. So too, if you have one stem cell, or myoblast, whatever, that you use to create a larger piece of meat, the cell keeps multiplying and repeating, you know. So then everything that comes from it should be prohibited as well. If it came from a prohibited source, if it came from an available meat, or it came from a live animal, which is prohibited because of basman achai, this is not including the exception of milk. So that's an exception to the rule, based on the xeris hakasiv. Milk from a live animal is permitted. This should have the status as aser. Yoytzim min aser aser. This is one cell that keeps reproducing. And in fact, that seems to be the opinion of Rosh Weiss. He made even a broader statement. Even if I create it through artificial means, if it's chemically the same as meat, it has the status of meat. However, the OU also contacted this Pesach in Bnei Brak, name of Shlomo Gross, who felt that this is, and Rabbi Ganak just told me now that that's his position, that this he used to have a different position. Now his position is that since the cell just keeps multiplying and reproducing, it should have the status of the original cell. So if the original cell was Aser, there should be like a Yoytzim in Aser, Aser, and it should be prohibited. Other Rabbanim also made a similar argument as well. What about, will the meat be fleishiks? What if I start with an original cell that's from a shechted animal? So you have to take it pretty soon after it's shechted, otherwise it starts to decompose. But if you'll take it, a live animal is better, because it's not, once the blood stops flowing, it'll already start to decompose immediately. So you have to take it pretty quickly. But let's say take it from a shechted animal. So should it be fleishiks or not fleishiks? Should have the original status as the original cell? So those that argue, based on a comment of the Rambam, that it should have the status of fleishiks as well. Why? The Rambam writes that there's two types of yoytze. Seems to say that there's two types of yoytze min aser aser. The Rambam said, let's say a person would eat a cow that's born to a camel. He said, that's prohibited. It came from a camel, it's aser. Do you get malchus like you ate the camel? Yes. What if I drink milk that comes from a camel? Malchus? So he says, also, Yaitzman, also, also. Es hagomel. You can't have the milk that comes. Do you get Malchus? So there, the Rambam says in Paragim of Machachel, Sasur, Salach, Avav, no. No Malchus. Afo pisha, chala behema, tamei, obeite, oiv, tamei, asur, min, atoira, ein, loikin, aleim. There's no Malchus. Only shenamar mi besaram lo yisechelu al habasar hu lo yikaveinu lo yikav abeitu al achalav. There's no malchus for an egg or for milk. Why? Both are asr because of yaitzim and asr. Asr, you have a cow that comes from a camel is asr because yaitzim and asr. Asr came from a camel. You have milk that came from a camel is asr because yaitzim and asr. Asr. Why do I get malchus for one and not malchus for the other? So Reb Chaim there explains in the Rambam because there's two halachas of yaitzim. One halacha of yaitzim is generic. I have a camel, produces milk. No one is going to say the milk is an extension of the camel. It's not similar consistency. One is a liquid, one is a solid. They're not the same. But it came from prohibited source. So yaitzim and asr, but that's a generic Easter, but it's not the same as the camel. Camel has malchus, the milk, no malchus. But a cow that comes from a camel, that has the same consistency as the camel, says Reb Chaim. That's also basar. So since it's also basar, that's like you're eating the camel alein. It's like you're eating the camel itself. And therefore, just like if you ate the camel, it would have malchus. If you eat the cow, it should have malchus. That's Reb Chaim's shtickel Torah. It says, Masha Einken Chalav Ubeitim Shal Tamei and Asur and Eino Machmas Atzman Kevin De Eino Min Basar. Yes, the egg and the milk. That's not fleishiks. It's not meat. Vein Ba Eni Sura. That's not the same as eating the camel, the Tameim. That's not like the camel. Homer Torah. The Asur and Hei Mei Sura the Yaitzei. It's a separate Easter of Yaitzei. But the cow that comes from the camel, that's fleishik, that's basar. That is the status of the camel itself. So to over here, this cell, the stem cell, reproduces. Even if it's a from a kosher animal that's shechted properly, but it's the same cell that keeps reproducing. So along the same lines as Reb Chaim, one could argue that that has the status of fleishiks. It came from a fleishik cell, so yoytzei min fleishik should be fleishiks. Obviously, the halach of yoytzei min asa doesn't apply to permitted meat, but along the same lines as Reb Chaim argued, since it's coming from meat and it's similar in consistency to the original source where it came from, it should have the status of the meat where it came from. And if the original meat was fleishiks, this should be fleishiks as well. So therefore, which I think is the most intuitive approach, that the stem cell meat has the same status as the stem cell from where it came. So if the stem cells came from a myoblast, came from a kosher shechted animal, it should be permitted. If it came from a nevela meat or from a live animal that was us because of bas min hachai, then whatever comes from it should also be prohibited. There's one other issue, though, and that is that this stem cell has to grow in a serum, has to grow in a together with proteins and together with blood and together with other things in order to enable it to grow in the culture, in order to grow properly. So one could have argued, hey, this cell is microscopic, it's batel in a larger culture that it's growing. So even if it comes from prohibited meat, it should be batel in a larger culture and where it's growing. So this is not really applicable for two reasons. Number one is we really hold ein mevatel nisal chachil. We're not mevatel isurim. So if you know that this is going to be the case and you're producing it for Jewish customers, you can't be mevatel isal chachila. So you shouldn't then engage in this process knowingly. The other issue is that over here we would apply the rule of a davar hamaimed. The Gemara says in Masechtas Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to have cheese that was produced by non-Jews. What are you afraid of? Are you afraid that the milk was from a non-kosher animal? No, that's not what the fear is. It says the Gemara, the fear is that they curdle the cheese. In order to curdle the milk into cheese, you need rennet. Rennet now is produced artificially, but it used to be produced from the intestines of the animal. So they're afraid you're going to be mamadit. You're going to curdle the milk, but or kevas nevela, with non-kosher animals. In which case, it will be prohibited. Why will it be prohibited? So the Rama explains over here, that is because since the item changed, based on the rennet that you inserted, even though the rennet is really buttail, it's negligible in the larger mixture of the milk, but it changes everything. It changed the whole mixture. So it supports, Davar Amam, it means supports the whole mixture, changed the nature of it from milk into cheese, and now it's recognizable. How can you call that buttail? So over here, the stem cells, you know, the meat, even if it is buttail in the larger culture, that is what is going to grow and to create the piece of meat. So in the end, if it came from non-kosher stem cells, it's going to become a Davar Hamayimid. That will change the texture of everything that's going on later, and it will be recognizable. It can no longer be considered negligible in the larger mixture. Yeah.
When we say that it only affects it if it changes the texture of the form, or would it also include the taste?
Like, oh, of course, if you could taste it. For sure.
Even though it's less than 160?
Yes.
Not jalapeno.
If I create a drop of flavor that is so powerful that it can fill make the entire Hudson River taste like fruit punch, so then, yes, the whole, if that came from chafe sources, it's called a vidi l'taima. Okay. That's also too. So this is a Davar Hamayimid. Anyway, it's not that relevant. We can pursue this line of reasoning further, but right now the serum that they use is also treif. It all comes from blood and prohibited, fat from non-kosher animals. But, the day will come. It could be the day will come where they could use stem cells from a kosher animal, that was shechted properly, and the serum in the culture will be kosher. If the serum in the culture are also not kosher, you're going to have other problems because it's growing in the culture that's not kosher. It's soaking in the culture that's not kosher. That also contributes to building what comes later. So even if it is batel, it's really a bad way of pursuing it. But if the stem cells would come from a kosher animal, the serum in the culture it grows in would be kosher. So then it could be kosher, but according to many parts, as we explained, it would have the status of fleishiks. Even according to those, last thing, who hold, and it's a big machlokes right now, who hold, I think we know which way is going to win, just from the way kashrus goes in general, but which way will prevail, because you want to include the most number of people possible, and the kosher cheeseburger is alluring, but not that much of a real need, so I don't know if people are going to be mice and effish. But even if one will argue that it is parev, because it was created in usual means, an abnormal way, or perhaps because the cells initially were subclinical. But there's another issue, and that is marasayim. The Shechter points out, as everybody else who discusses this issue. The Ramah writes over here in Hilchas Basa B'chalav that one is allowed to eat meat or chicken together with chayav shkedim, with almond milk. But you have to be concerned with the marasayim. People are going to become confused and think it's real milk, or they might suspect you of eating milk and meat together. Or they two problems with marasayim. So therefore, the Ramah says if you're going to eat chayav shkedim, almond milk, together with meat, you have to leave the container on the table that says almond milk in order to permit it. Otherwise, there's a marasayim. You have to leave almonds on the table. What about the fact that we all have non-dairy creamer? We all have parv schnitzel, and there's the fake bacon and all these things, and the Incrediburger, whatever it's called. So, what about all that? The answer is that we all know these things exist, therefore there's no marasayim. That's based on Ramah over here in Hilchos Shatnez. Of course, Shatnez is one is not allowed to wear wool and linen together. But what about an item that looks like linen? What looks like linen? Hemp. Shulchan Aruch says cannabis doesn't mean canvas, it means from the cannabis plant, not the seed, but the leaf, which produces hemp. So that, when woven together into a garment, looks like linen. So Shulchan Aruch says he cannot wear wool together with hemp. It looks like linen. But the Ramah says, b'mokom d'shkiach shari, if everybody knows that this exists, then it's allowed. So if everybody knows that there's a non-dairy creamer and everybody knows that there's a parva schnitzel, the vegetable schnitzel, so then you don't have to leave the container on the table when you serve non-dairy creamer. It's assumed to be permitted based on this Ramah, because everybody knows these things exist. But over here, with regards to these stem cell burgers, instead they hope to one day produce the filet, not just ground meat, but something else. there's a marasayan. It'll be a marasayan to regular fleishik. So certainly one would have to be, even if one will argue that it's parv, and many disagree with that, there would definitely be the issue of marasayan. You could solve the problem by putting something on the table and saying that this is parv, but it will definitely have, that will be another hurdle that one has to contend with. People say, well, let's say it becomes so popular that everybody knows that there's fleishik of meat and parv meat, which sounds like, wow, you know, we might actually come to such a day. So first of all, that's way off. That's long into the future. The first stem cell burger was produced in 2013 and cost like $300,000 to produce. Now they have it a little bit down to a few thousand dollars per hand, per, you know, patty. But we're far away from this being a marketable endeavor or being as common as regular meat. But if it will become so common, let's say it becomes so common that everybody knows about it, and this is like taking over the meat industry because it's so much more preferable, then I think you might not have the issue of marasayan, but Rabbi said, what will you run back into the issue then? If it becomes so common, what was the whole heter based on for those who felt it was parv in the first place? Because it was abnormal, because it was unusual, but it becomes so common, that's like cooking in the microwave. So then gewalt, so then the whole thing, you lose your whole heter in the first place. It might be fleishik, it might become so usual, this is the normal way of producing meat. So then it might have, again, everyone might end up coming back to the same point, and then it would have the status of the original cells when it was derived from. Anyway, if this ever comes, Lamaisa, it's going to be a big issue, to say the least.